Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the second interview with Ms. Lily Mu Lee on July 30th, 1982. This is tape 3. Okay, Lily, can you describe about, you know, the grand opening of the new Chinatown, what you can remember as a child?
Well, it's been so long, it's very, very difficult. However, I remember, of course, the fireworks, firecrackers. Mm-hmm. We all had a lot of firecrackers, and of course, we were careful in those days, and I remember getting packs of firecrackers and separating them and putting them in little bags, uh-huh. and then lighting them in the streets in Chinatown, and of course the lion dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was always quite exciting. And we had the Miwai Drum Corps, I believe, wasn't
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
That was always fun to mm-hmm. watch. And you know, I can't remember when we talked to my brothers. I think the memory was sharpened.
Okay, so like, yeah, these things like firecrackers and the lion dance also, you know, they have these celebrations during the New Year's and other holidays. Or mm-hmm. it's only like for special occasions?
No, those were for special occasions. Well, we had the Moon Festival,
mm-hmm.
the Chinese New Year's, and 10-10.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the fireworks and dragon dance or
uh-huh.
lion dance,
uh-huh.
and we had different types of fireworks. We had them where they you hang
the
them very high.
Mm-hmm.
No, you hang them very high and then you burn them and it's a picture.
Oh, is that?
Have you ever seen those?
No.
Yeah, when it burns out, you see like maybe a man on a horse
uh-huh.
or a flower.
Is that right?
Yeah, in the box. Don't you have those in Taiwan?
No,
yeah.
No. Uh-huh.
That was always fun to watch, but I've never seen any since. Maybe that was from China,
uh-huh.
but they had them a long, long time
uh-huh.
ago.
Uh-huh.
It's, oh, there used to be puppet shows, too.
Uh-huh. Chinese
you
puppet
see?
Show?
No. They spoke in English, and I forget where they set them up. You know, they had the little puppet where you hold
yes. mm-hmm.
by your hands.
Uh-huh.
We had that in China.
So the figure is like Chinese characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they use English.
That's right.
Huh. Where did they perform? I mean,
in Chinatown. And I forget where, but you know, China's only a block or a couple of blocks. But someone must have had a little booth.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of those straight booths.
Yes, yeah. Tall and
mm-hmm.
high up.
And we used to have fortune tellers, too.
Uh-huh.
With sticks.
Did you try, or you just go there and
watch
people?
Yeah, we just
watch.
They
mm-hmm.
had that. God, now some of the things are coming back. We don't have those anymore, do we?
No, not.
They see that, and they used to have try to pick beans with the chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a great big.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Somebody told you about
uh-huh.
that? Yeah, a great big jar
mm-hmm.
filled with beans, and you try to pick them up with your chopsticks.
Uh-huh. So this is part of a
yeah, it
sort
was
of a celebration, different
they had,
booth.
Yeah, different things they had in Chinatown.
Uh-huh. How about like, you're talking about fortune teller. Did your mother or your father go for the fortune teller and ask them for the fortune? Or when you watched, did you go with your parents?
I think that was primarily for the Caucasian. That was for the tourists.
Okay.
That was more for the tourists. Well, you shake up a stick and then
mm-hmm.
it had the fortune on the
mm-hmm.
stick.
Mm-hmm. But then they did have that in the temple sometimes. Right.
Oh, that's right. We did have temple, but that was in Old Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
I
so
remember going to the one in Old Chinatown, in an alley.
Mhm. And so your mother will go, and you will follow your mother or your father.
Yeah, I think it's mainly my father. I don't think my mom went anywhere.
That's right. You told me that your
yeah.
mom just stay home and
uh-huh.
Only have a couple of good friends.
Yeah, we may have gone. Ourselves, or because it's right nearby,
mm-hmm.
we must have gone upstairs, but I don't remember my mom going.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember her going at all.
Uh-huh. Did your mother practice any religions or worship the ancestors? By son?
I think she probably had that in the house, but it wasn't like constant. She didn't, like maybe at the cemetery we did, but she didn't practice that at home. Uh-huh. Not that I can remember.
Maybe
my brothers will say something different.
But did any of your family member become a Christian entities or?
Just myself.
Uh-huh. In the later days.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Why? Because you went to the Catholic school?
Yeah, because of the Chinese Catholic Center.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And what is your parents' reaction? Did they sort of have any objection to that? Or?
Well, it was very difficult because it was a Chinese school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a natural process to go to church, mm-hmm. because it's more like your friends were there and they had activities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they would. I think if it was just a church, maybe they would not have as much, but there was so many activities there, and I guess that was a source of our entertainment, and the Chinese school was there, and the Chinese teacher was there on Sunday. It was difficult to say no.
Mm-hmm, right. But then you have difficult to say no, but how about your parents? They have difficulty, too, to say no to them.
It was a natural process, so they didn't object. But I think if it were primarily church, it would have been difficult to get started going.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I mean.
I see. How about your brothers? Did they go to the Chinese school, Catholic Chinese center?
Yes, they did.
They also did that.
But I don't remember them going to church. They must have been there. We'll have to ask them when
right.
we see them.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, how do you find that the experience in Catholic Church? Last time you did talk about the experience there and you found it was great experiences. And do you have a special memory of those days since we saw the pictures?
Oh, some of the pictures. Of course, we always enjoy the plays. The Virgin Mary and Joseph and
you
Betsy.
Play Mary part.
Yeah, I seem to always have that part.
Why did they choose you? Do you know
I
any
know.
Reason?
I didn't know. That's interesting. Why did they? I really don't know.
Of course, they probably never really tell you.
No, I was. Maybe because I was in the movie, that was the natural process, right?
And you were good, too.
I don't know. That was
that
the easy part.
After you quit making movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was after. I remember we even did that. I think we used an auditorium, and it seems as if we used the Million Dollar Theater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that stuck in my, one of the theaters, and we did perform a play.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Noema directed us, and people came to see us.
Uh-huh.
And it must have been some fundraising night. I forgot the details, but we did that, and we were at a bishop's home, I remember, and smelling the cake and the baking of cake because we didn't have that in Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember a snow trip.
Uh-huh.
And then going to function and doing, we must have performed Chinese dances at different social functions
in
the American
school.
I think in the American Society, their fundraising or whatever they had.
Mm-hmm.
But that was quite an experience to go to all those fancy homes.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. How about the American ladies in the photos? They were the sponsors or they were the supporters of the school. Then what did they do to
you
school?
I really didn't know. I think they were probably working with Sister Noema, gave some type of maybe moral money support, and probably I remember receiving gifts at Christmas
from them particularly.
And it could have been from them. They may have gathered the Marine Corps gathered gifts for Christmas. I think that's what they did for us.
Yeah, you did mention that the particular woman that made dolls.
Oh yeah, make dolls. Yeah, she made them for a long time, and eventually, we used them for our carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And that came later on in the years,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they helped us an awful lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Chinese school actually, where they are not only learning Chinese, you also learn some American cultures and...
Yeah, and that we experienced American culture, but we learned Chinese. See, in Chinatown, we experienced Chinese culture. In American school, we learned English.
Uh-huh, yeah. I see. So actually, the Catholic center is not a regular American school or anything. They do have a Catholic high school, Cathedral High School, which is different, right?
Yeah, that's different. Why did we use that? Oh, we used that during summer school, I believe. We used some of their rooms. Or maybe we use some of the rooms, I think, as the class got quite big, or I forget the reason, but we did have classes at Cathedral High School.
I see.
But Chinese classes.
Chinese classes. Yeah, yeah, I just want to verify that, whether
you
stopped going to Castlaw. You did graduate from Castlaw.
Yes. They didn't, in our time, they didn't have American schooling.
Uh-huh. I see.
It was just Chinese.
Uh-huh. I see. Well, we're sort of jumping it back and forth, and I was going to ask you also another thing is that last time, you know, we get into a little bit of your occupation and your success in your career and what leads to your success, and I think a lot to do with your attitudes. You know, you always think positively and rather, you know, on the negative side. Is that true, or what is, can you tell us about your philosophy on that part?
You know, I think I was naturally a very positive person. I never felt anything could not be done.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was too simple-minded. But whatever I thought in my mind, I never felt it would not succeed. I never thought about all the reasons why it could not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just felt that this was the road to take, and then you try to find ways to accomplish it,
mm-hmm.
not ways of how it cannot be accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I think that made me very successful. And then I went from one business to the other and had joint ventures and had partnerships. Many of them didn't work out, but I didn't feel bad about it and I didn't dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a bad experience, they dwell on it and they carry it with them. To their next experience, so they never get their next experience started.
Mm-hmm.
Because many people try to view a new project or a new venture, all the reasons why it may not succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they carry their past experience and bring it forward with their new experience, then there's too negative. Once you develop that negative attitude, you suddenly start looking for it in your new venture, and you begin to spot it when it may not be.
Mm-hmm.
Or you may spot it and say, here it is, and you stop,
mm-hmm.
rather than not seeing it move ahead.
Uh-huh.
And that's why many people don't succeed, I think.
Uh-huh. But how about, did you ever have any negative attitudes?
I don't think so. I can't say that I'm not aware of something that's bad,
mm-hmm.
or a bad experience, but it's an experience that I separate from myself.
Mm-hmm.
That here's the bad experience, like you have put it on this table. Here's the experience. I don't bring it and make it a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And many times you see something bad, you have to decide whether you're going to take one route,
mm-hmm.
that would make you unhappy, or take the other route that would make you happy,
mm-hmm.
or change your attitude. Like when I got my divorce, I guess you're supposed to be sad and you cry and you blame your husband and why didn't it succeed, and here I'm, you know, close to 40 and now I'm divorced. You can think of all these things. Or you can get angry in front of your kids and cry in front of your kids. But I was very fortunate that I felt that I was able to analyze that if I was sad,
mm-hmm.
which of course you are sad,
right?
But if you show it to your children, then your children become sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are three people that's sad, and then it's up to the mother to carry the mother out of that syndrome, and then you have your two children,
uh-huh.
to carry out of this syndrome. So So then it's best not to show it,
mm-hmm.
and just take a neutral position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the route I take it, and it made it very easy
mm-hmm.
to get over a very supposedly very unhappy period. But if you don't think it's unhappy, it becomes not unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Was it very difficult to carry on that kind of thought, you know, not to think about it, because you were sometimes, you know, if you are not doing something right or something, or you feel sad or something, you have to force yourself in on a neutral position. Was that very difficult?
No, very easy. Because once you start taking those steps, it's more of a burden to be unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
It really is more of a burden. And I think if you experience the other avenue for over a long period of time, then everything else starts to apply.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's very, remarkable. I think especially among Chinese, I don't know, I shouldn't make that kind of generalization,
I think you're right, because I have a judge who's a very dear friend of mine, and he's an observer Chinese woman. And he said, you're different, Lily. He said, all the Chinese women are negative.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you're different, you're positive.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I think it comes from Chinese words.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Chinese words, the Chinese tend to, at least in my dialect, it was all right to be negative in Chinese words. But when you translate it into English, it becomes very bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you use a negative tone to describe everything, but you're not really negative. However, if you keep that up, you become.
Mm-hmm. That's very good point,
right?
yes. And and of course, most Chinese, if they are Chinese women who were reared or brought up in Chinese way, they probably never thinking about how bad it is if mm-hmm. you translate into American way.
Yeah, and it seems as if the Chinese feel that if you're burdened and you're suffering or you're working hard,
mm-hmm.
then it's happy.
Uh huh.
However, you can't, unless the whole society is that way, then that becomes a level of happiness. But if you're in another society that isn't that way, especially now, it's very difficult to apply and feel the same.
Mm-hmm. So which means that if you want to carry the Chinese way of thinking, I mean, especially the negative part, or, you know, even can apply to the humbleness, yeah, you know, into American society, it doesn't, you know, apply well.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think being humble is okay. I think it being respectful is okay. I think it's good to have that, because it's easier to view, because your ego doesn't get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You see, your ego doesn't get in the way, so that's all right. But you don't want to be so humble that someone take advantage of you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see, there's a difference. It's in this world, it's our right to be used, because we're here to use and help each other, but not to be abused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that's a fine line that you have to apply
uh-huh.
in your thinking.
Uh-huh. How did you find the Chinese cultural, Chinese background helped you in your career, and especially you're so successful? Is there any secret, you know, is that an advantage of you being able to sort of blending to, you know, two cultures and make it successful?
Oh, I think if I were to have any background, I think Chinese, because we've developed a patience about ourselves, you know, and we are humble, we are respectful. It gives us a better opportunity to view a situation
mm-hmm.
better than the average.
Uh-huh.
We're not emotional mm-hmm. in the sense that it causes you. When you get emotional, or you get upset, or you get angry, or there's greed in you, your mind doesn't function properly.
Mm-hmm.
And when it doesn't function properly, or you tighten up, you can't make the right decision. The decision is based on emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Chinese have that advantage in that they're what, quote, cool,
uh-huh.
unquote, you know.
Uh-huh.
We have a very cool attitude. And I think we're very industrious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those portions have helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And also that I've been dominated by the men so long. It sort of kept me, more feminine than being a very tough businesswoman.
Uh-huh. And you feel that, you know, it also helped too, in a sense.
Well, I think in the business world, during this transition period, the most threat is not so much the women as the men,
mm-hmm.
because we're beginning to play in the past is what is known as a men's role,
mm-hmm.
meaning they're to work, they're to bring home the bread and the money and so forth. And now they see a woman playing that same role is quite threatening,
mm-hmm.
subconsciously to
yeah.
them.
Uh-huh.
God, I forgot what point I was. It's easier for them if you can play the be feminine. And not aggressive, it becomes less threatening. And by having them, by being more feminine, you can help them guide and help them walk through this transition period.
Uh-huh. And then once you walk through the transaction period, can you be on the same level, or
yeah,
you
I think
still
so.
Keep as
I think many. I think many years from today, you find that. That it would not be threatening to each party. I think the roles will then start to establish
mm-hmm.
from the mother to the child, and then as the child grow up.
Mm-hmm.
I see that with my sons now.
Uh-huh.
They don't see me, you know, they see me as an equal in business.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't mind a woman going to work
mm-hmm.
because they see it through me.
Mm-hmm.
So then if their girlfriends or their wives are that way, it's not threatening.
Uh-huh.
Because it's almost like, well, that's the role you're supposed to play.
Uh-huh.
You're supposed to bring in 50%. If I'm going to work, you have to work.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the old days, it isn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of older men, because I see different all age groups, and I can see the difference in the young men, the mid-20s to the early 30s. One recently said to me, he said, he must have been around 27. He was going to apply to law school. And he said, Lily, when I grow up, I want to be like you. You see? So, and I have my son, who's 29 now. When he was about 25 or 26, he
uh-huh.
worked in an office in Oxnard for this also man in his very late 20s or early 20s. Early 30s,
uh-huh.
and he was so impressed with what I was doing, not me as a woman, but in business,
uh-huh.
and so he listened to me motivating him and how I got started and so forth, and different success books I read that I communicated to him, that he wanted a picture of me. I don't forget how he got it, but he put it right next to the wall on his desk. And every day he looked at, I'm going to be like Lily.
Oh. Did you find most men accept the fact that, you know, you were so successful without any sort of discrimination, like since you were a woman, you know, and thinking that because you are a woman, you are successful in this field? And
well, we have to be careful, women, that we don't use the woman as a crutch to use to not succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the early days, they said to me, when I wasn't succeeding, that was because I was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm successful, they're saying I'm successful because I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So they, how do you equate that?
Right.
So then I would say to any woman that wanted to, or a man that went to go in any venture, don't boss yourself into norm, because whatever you perceive and whatever you want will be, if you firmly believe that it will, that you can accomplish it. You asked about success. I think the positive thought that I know that it will be there. I believe that when you put a thought in the air, that thought then takes on a life of its own and it becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you take a positive thought or a success thought or a goal, you will accomplish it in some way or manner. But if you take a negative thought and you live that experience, then that becomes, that takes on a life of its own and you live it.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
like a world that you can perceive totally your own world. An extreme case is that of a mental person.
Right.
He has a total world of it because his mind has perceived it. Mm-hmm. We do that in lesser degree,
mm-hmm.
but in the same manner.
Right.
So if you take a positive attitude towards life, that will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a negative, that will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
See, mind is very, very powerful.
Right.
And that's why I say with the men and the women, eventually the men will change. But it's easier for them to change. It's easier for the women to be part of it if you're non-threatening.
Mm-hmm. Does that also apply to a woman who happens to be a minority woman? You know, if it's a minority woman and using the same attitude as you say, positive attitudes,
mm-hmm.
not get threatening by the others, you know, thinking about you will fail or you will not be able to compete with other people. Does that, as a minority woman, do you have to put extra effort on it, or the positive attitude would automatically?
Well, we have the advantage, as we had talked about, if you're talking about Chinese,
mm-hmm.
there is certainly that advantage. And I think that any ethnic group, the desire to see it succeed is greater than those that have had it in the past. You've seen other races where they're more willing or more determined to succeed,
mm-hmm.
and I think that offsets anything else, that because you're a minority, because you're Chinese or Japanese or black, that would certainly offset that, especially for Orientals. I think Orientals have and perceived by men as exotic and
mm-hmm.
and mysterious and
uh-huh.
and I know that when we were at the last women's conference, one particular woman was concerned about the way that the man was describing or calling her a petite woman or a cute tomato or remarks like that. I don't think that should be referred as offensive.
Uh-huh.
I think we have to realize it's his only way of communicating that he ever knew how.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I would prefer to have someone say that to me
uh-huh.
than to say, well, who wants her working here? You know, why do we want that female there?
Uh-huh.
At least that's easier to get to acquainted to, I mean, not sexually or you know, personal relationship, but that's a good, that's like opening doors for you to converse with them if you can perceive it as that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree with most people saying that minority women in you know, competing with the man in the business world or any other professional field, they have double disadvantage being a woman as well as a minority. Do you agree with that?
Totally not. I think I'm an example.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can I think I can probably make that statement better than anyone else because I've gone through the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done it. Some people, well, you're luckier, well, you're different. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally not.
Mm-hmm. Again, I would say, I would assume that, again, it's personal attitudes. And once
Absolutely.
Your attitude, your mind is set there, you don't really have to worry about what
mm-hmm.
image
mm-hmm.
that you know, you have
yeah,
or people have on
I think
you.
If you look for it, it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I think if anyone looks for anything, they'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
You look at someone that's, if you see they're not very friendly, have you been to a party where people were not too friendly? And you try to, you know that there's no way you're going to be able to say hello to them. Well, that poor guy or that poor woman will love someone to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But why should they be there unless otherwise?
Right.
But they don't know how, and the more they act the way, the less people that will talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same way in business or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're open to vibration, so you create the vibration or around you to bring people to you. But if you have a chip on your shoulders and you're okay, he doesn't like me, I'm a minority, he doesn't like me because of this, and I can tell, look at the way you look at me, it's because you're looking at him that way, naturally he would respond.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
even
a very good point.
Oh, sure, and there's, because I'm involved in the psychic field, I'm very aware that I've read a lot of books, I've talked to a lot of people, I've attended a lot of seminars, where just your thought vibration can reach to the other person,
mm-hmm.
and they don't know where it's coming from, but they can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, they did an experiment with a guy lifting weights, even color.
Mm-hmm.
He see, they placed gray in front of him. He was able to lift, to lift this up.
Uh-huh.
They put pink on him, and he couldn't.
Uh-huh.
But see, and here is just the color. But
right.
See, it's the vibrations from the color.
Uh-huh.
If a piece of paper can do that, how powerful your mind and what your mind is doing.
Yeah, and it always shows in your face.
Yeah, and you don't...
And your behavior.
Well, yeah, or you they don't have to see you. Same
mm-hmm.
thing if you have a complete room in pink.
Mm-hmm.
The colors will cause you to be, you know, to be very, what's the word you do? Very inactive and
uh-huh.
very relaxed. Thought vibrations are stronger. They're like the radio waves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be facing
mm-hmm.
the radio to
mm-hmm.
feel it, to
mm-hmm.
hear it.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with your inner self.
Mm-hmm.
That thoughts and the way you feel is spread throughout, and it can go on, and it stays in the air.
Yes.
That's how the psychic picks up messages, I think.
Right. Uh-huh.
And that's how they have this. People are able to read other people mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just tune in.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, do you think that your attitudes